The first item is number 7, update on the Elk River Recovery Assessment. Alita Mangendorf and Darren
Maru.
Okay.
Saved him.
I'm terrible with names, so it's okay to beat me up till I get it right.
Saved him.
Well, good afternoon, Chairman and members of the board. I'm Alita Mangelsdorf. I'm the senior environmental scientist in charge of basin planning here at the North Coast Region. And my primary duty today is to introduce Darren Maru from Cal Trout, who's going to give us an update on the Elk River Recovery Assessment, which is a project that this board has been very involved in getting off the ground. Before I turn the mic over to him, though, I wanted to just introduce the project, for especially for new board members and for members of the audience who have not been tracking this project, and to just make clear the context within which this project is then connected to other projects that we're involved in the Elk River. So I will be saying a few words about the Elk River Recovery Assessment as essentially a sediment remediation feasibility study, which was something that this board asked for in 2004. Caltrout and its subcontractors are identified as a viable lead entity, which is also something that the board asked for in 2004. And then I'll be saying a little bit about the relationship amongst the upper Elk TMDL, sediment TMDL, the lower river impairments, our interest in establishing a watershed stewardship framework, and this project and how all those fit together. And then Darren will have the bulk of the time, and he'll go over these items associated with the project, a brief history, program goals, and approach. Identify the assessment team and key partners, and then walk you through the project tasks and deliverables. There's been a lot of interest in pilot project implementation, so he'll describe some of that effort, and the landowner outreach and stakeholder stewardship framework effort that's currently underway. So just to provide a little bit of background, there has been a long history of industrial timber operations in the Upper Elk. This is probably a very similar history to what was described earlier today for Jordan Creek. In 1988, in that period between 1988 and 1997, there were massive discharges of fine sediment waste from logging in the upper watershed. And that came to rest as stored sediment, which has impaired beneficial uses and diminishes flow conveyance and sediment transport capacity. This has resulted in excessive flooding conditions, which pose a risk to the residents in that area, safety risk to people who live there, and constitute a nuisance condition. And this, again, is an outcome that is significantly different from what you saw in photographs earlier this morning on Jordan Creek, where there appears to be evidence of a natural recovery with sediment that was previously stored now degrading and moving out. And that's not the case in the Elk River, which is what has precipitated the need for the Elk River Recovery Assessment. So an overt effort to remediate the sediment that is there in the stream channel. In 2004, the regional board denied a petition that had been brought to it to clean up the stored sediment, and in particular were concerned that there needed to be a scientifically defensible feasibility study and a viable lead entity that would take responsibility for assessing conditions and doing the work. So in 2012, this board adopted a resolution which directed staff to go to the state board with a request for funding through the cleanup and abatement account to fund the Elk River Recovery Assessment, which was at that point identified as this scientifically based feasibility study, a mechanism by which we can assess the condition of the stream channel, its ability or lack of ability to convey sediment, and develop a series of restoration concepts for how to remediate the sediment impairment. And simultaneously, we, as part of that package that we sent to the state board in our request for a cleanup and abatement account, identified Cal Trout and their subcontractors, Stillwater Sciences and Northern Hydrology, as that viable lead entity there. been working very closely in the Elk River for a number of years. We're part of the pilot modeling effort and in fact developed the pilot model, and so are really the local experts on the modeling, hydrodynamic modeling exercise. This board was very helpful in our getting funds from the state board. It was not immediately obvious to the state board that an assessment was really best funded by the cleanup and abatement account, but they were convinced that it was a worthy enterprise and funded the project along with some cost shares that we've gotten from HRC and others. And then the contract was finally awarded to Cal Trout and as the lead in earlier this year. So just to say a little bit about how this project connects up with the other projects that we're involved in the Elk River, we're on the last leg of putting out a draft Upper Elk Sediment TMDL, which will be available for public review shortly. And it assesses sediment delivery to the watershed from the Upper Elk from the period of 1955 through 2011. It describes inputs both from the hill slope as well as assesses the volume of sediment there in the channel as a result of historic discharges. Simultaneously, the Lower Elk is also listed as sediment impaired. We opted not to include that as part of the sediment TMDL under the theory that there are two known sources of sediment delivery in the Lower Elk, and those include grazing and stormwater discharges from the city of Eureka, and that there were programs either developed or in the process of being developed that would address those issues, and we needn't do a lot of work in analysis prior to those programs being implemented. As a result of a lot of stakeholder outreach and discussion here in front of the board, it's become clear that we should be formalizing our stakeholder outreach process through the development of a stewardship framework and engage stakeholders more deliberately in the discussion of a whole series of issues, including implementation of the Upper Elk Sediment TMDL, planning, permitting, and funding of sediment remediation projects once we have a good picture through the recovery assessment of what those projects ought to be, finding mechanisms for addressing cumulative watershed effects and land management practices generally, both in the upper watershed and lower watershed, ensuring reliable water supplies, and developing coordinated monitoring and adaptive management approach. So I wanted to be clear that the recovery assessment is part of this larger picture. Darren will talk a little bit about his views of watershed stewardship and how the project that he's working on fits within that framework. But just to be clear, the stewardship framework will encompass the variety of things that were involved in the recovery assessment being just one. And with that, I will turn it over to Darren to give us an update on the recovery assessment. If you were to do a... like a red.
Yeah. Nope.
So this changes the slide.
There we go. Okay, I got it. Good. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Thanks for having me here. My name is Darren Maru. I'm the North Coast Manager for California Trout. We are a statewide nonprofit conservation organization with our headquarters in San Francisco and my office in Arcata. I wanted to start by saying thank you, especially to the board and the staff, for having the confidence to select Caltrout to be that viable lead entity for this program. I think it's a wonderful honor to be involved in such a controversial watershed. But I really, in all seriousness, this is a very, very unique watershed, and it needs a lot of focused attention, and I'm very privileged to step forward and be of help. You're all, I think, very familiar with the history of Elk River and its impairments to sediment and flooding issues, and I'm not necessarily here to talk about that. Instead, I think I'd like to focus on a step forward, a way forward for this process, really focusing on how we get towards sediment remediation and watershed recovery in this watershed. As you can see soon, We have already an extensive list of partners for this program, and I was anticipating one particular partner to be here today, Michael Bowen from the Coastal Conservancy. We've got a significant cost share from the Coastal Conservancy, and I know he was invited and had intended to be here, but he didn't make it. But Michael Bowen will be a very valuable member of our team as well. Also wanted to say that this will be a very ambitious program. It's large in scale. It will be expensive, but as Lita described to you, it's a very necessary process to get us on board with having the means to adequately address the impairment and how to solve this problem. And so I'm going to take you through how we're going to do that today. Spend a little bit of time just setting the stage for the recovery assessment, where it came from and so forth, just a little brief history. Alita mentioned there was a pilot modeling assessment, an effort that took place between 2011 and 12. This pilot modeling assessment took place in a portion of the Elk River watershed, a piece of the North Fork, a piece of the South Fork, and the confluence a little ways downstream. It was conducted by the same team that we've assembled for this broader recovery assessment, and I'll introduce those folks in a minute. The pilot modeling assessment was summarized and described in a very dense technical report, and it was also presented at a restoration summit to the public, and your staff was involved in all the steps of that pilot modeling assessment. After the modeling assessment was completed, there was a determination based on the success of that among a technical advisory committee, the engineer and technical team itself and regional board staff, that we could proceed with this full-scale watershed approach. And based on that determination, your board passed that resolution R1-2012-0079 in August 2012, supporting this watershed assessment approach. Upon that, those actions, we proceeded as a technical team, and this is when I became involved. We began scoping the recovery assessment in May of 2012, and as Alita described, a package was prepared and submitted to the State Water Board. There was some iterations to that back and forth based on questions and comments from the State Board, and primarily, I think, providing the State Board with a detailed justification for why those cleanup and abatement funds should be used for this assessment. And I think, Board Member Noren, you were involved in that as well, so I think you know the history of this. And I just wanted to note as well that that package that was submitted to the board contained our contemporary scope of work. In other words, it hasn't changed since then, with the exception that when the board reviewed these documents and the proposed assessment, they wanted to see a little bit more. They wanted to see some kind of pilot implementation projects be implemented as part of this plan, and they offered to provide some funding for that. So we do have some funding to start this pilot implementation program, and I'll describe that a little later in my talk today. So what is the Elk River Recovery Assessment? Well, I'd like to walk you through the program goals, our technical approach, and some of the primary deliverables that we'll provide you in the next couple of years. And the way I see it, there are two essential goals to this program. First is to conduct this integrated system-wide and scientifically based planning effort that is informed by a predictive modeling tool we're going to develop that will allow us to understand the geomorphic and biological responses. And I know it's a mouthful, so I separate it into two goals. So we'll evaluate these responses to potential effects of sediment remediation and reduction measures. So in other words, we're going to go out and implement some things based on this assessment, this technical tool that we have. And only when we understand some of the implications of those actions can we move forward with that safely. And again, as Alita said, this program, in our view, will satisfy the board's requirement of a feasibility study and will result in an implementation strategy that will provide recommendations on how to move forward with remediation. So here's a bird's eye view of the Elk River watershed from Google Earth. It is a fairly data-rich watershed based on the work that PALCO did years ago through their habitat conservation plan, and that's been subsequently taken over by Humboldt Redwood Company. And so we know a fair amount of information from the upper watershed. What we don't know is enough information about the lower watershed, the valley section with the Elk River running through it. And so you can see, I can give you my pointer, portion of the North Fork here to the confluence, South Fork to the confluence, and then all the way down to Humboldt Bay. And this is where we'll be focusing most of our attention. We'll be obtaining all of the information that's available to the public from our partners, Humboldt Redwood Company and others, but most of our data collection effort in this effort will be focused on the lower portion of Elk River. The approach that we expect to take is to expand on the pilot modeling approach, which we felt was very successful, which developed a hydrodynamic model and a sediment transport model combined. And so we'll expand that pilot approach to the entire mainstem Elk River and approximately 2 miles of the South Fork and approximately 7 miles of the North Fork. We will go through a process of assessing the existing stream conditions. We've already collected a longitudinal profile from the portions that I showed you in the prior map all the way down to Humboldt Bay. And through that longitudinal profile survey, we were able to make pretty extensive observations of sediment conditions. And so we've already used that survey to delineate reaches throughout the Elk River watershed, and we're focusing effort within those reaches, kind of strategizing and tiering our work. But our data collection will include characterizing sediment qualities and distribution across the bed, banks, and floodplain, looking at flooding and channel hydraulic characteristics, the vegetation types and densities throughout the riparian corridor, and to some extent, we'll be looking at fisheries habitat conditions. I think I've mentioned all of that. And as the second part of our approach here, we will assemble a technical advisory committee, and we hope to get some of the folks back from the prior TAC that was assembled to look at the pilot modeling effort that was done. And they, along with stakeholders, will help us define what the desired future conditions are for Elk River. And this is going to be a bit of a balancing act, I think. I don't think that anyone expects that we're going to be able to return Elk River to a condition that resembles pre-disturbance, and I mean pre-European disturbance. Those days are long gone. We've got a lot of working landscapes within the Elk River, but I think it's the baseline we need to set, that target that we need to set in order to understand what needs to be done to get us to those future conditions. And so that'll be a very big task involving our technical advisory committee and many of our stakeholders. And with that desired future condition identified, we'll go through a series of scenario development to test what it'll take to get there. And I think that'll be an iterative process, so we can examine certain things with our technical model, this hydrodynamic and sediment transport tool. We'll have some field information from the pilot modeling, pilot implementation program, and iteratively come up with what we think is the best suite of remediation actions to get us to those conditions. And when we get to that point, we'll be able to prepare some technical reports, also available for peer review and for public review, and we'll have what we call an implementation framework that will describe the suite of actions that we feel are appropriate to get us to those desired future conditions. If you have any questions along the way, this can be interactive, so don't hesitate to interrupt me. I think that we probably have the best technical team that I could imagine for this effort. I'm privileged to be a part of this group. Adona White will be our project manager. We're already under contract with the State Water Board, and I've got the three technical subcontractors in contract. So I will act as project director and aquatic ecologist. Jeff Anderson and Bonnie Pryor from Northern Hydrology and Engineering are just very talented. I've worked with Jeff Anderson for many years. He's one of the best modelers, if not the best modeler I know, especially related to tidal influences, which is a very unique talent. And we've got Jay Stallman from Stillwater Sciences and Jack Lewis. I think you might be familiar with Jack, who's a mathematician from formerly from Redwood Sciences Lab, who will be helping us with our statistical work. And as I mentioned, Michael Bowen, who I'm working with on several other projects, and he's quite knowledgeable on CEQA and the restoration projects process, and I think he'll be very valuable to us as well. Our key partners in this project, I know that Christy Wrigley is in the back here in the audience, and we welcome her as a partner. She'll be very valuable to us, and with her passion, as you've seen in the past, will help this process immensely. I think we're focusing on the middle and lower reach residents primarily, where our data collection will take place, and particularly the lower Elk River agricultural community that individually owns quite a bit of the watershed and places where we need to get access to collect data and so forth. Humboldt Redwood Company will be a very, very important partner. They are providing cost share for this program, as I'll show in a second, and Green Diamond Resources Company, who have a smaller ownership but have definitely been active and participant in our process so far. And of course, I put the stars here for the Regional Water Board, because we consider your leadership to be very instrumental in this process. So our contract with the state has 8 tasks. They're listed here. The task 1, project management and stakeholder coordination, is largely Caltrout's role. Tasks 2, 3, and 4 are essentially the data collection effort that we're conducting now, both collecting existing data and refining it as needed for the modeling, and collecting new data in the field. Task 5 will be to build, test, and run this hydrodynamic model. 6, as I mentioned, will be conducting this technical peer review process. So we'll have a technical advisory committee check in before, as we propose the details of the model and the inputs and the boundary conditions and so forth. And then after the modeling is done, we'll revisit the TAC and have them peer review the work that we've done. And task 7 will be developing 2 reports for you, a detailed technical report on the modeling, and then, as I mentioned, the implementation framework. And in task 8, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, this pilot implementation program. Key deliverables for this project. I think I've touched a little bit on the physical data. We'll have LIDAR and ground-based topography, hydraulics over a course of at least 1 winter, possibly 2, the sediment data extensively collected throughout the watershed and main stem and forks of the Elk, vegetation maps and vegetation types, densities, and so forth. We're building GIS databases, and we'll have, by the end, a fairly detailed channel monitoring infrastructure for collecting sediment and water level information. We'll have a peer-reviewed hydrodynamic model with a technical report, and we'll have this implementation framework with recommended recovery actions, and then we will have at least 1, and I hope more, implementation projects completed by the end of this program. Our funding sources, as I mentioned in my introduction, it is an expensive program. We have gotten $475,000 from the State Water Board Cleanup and Abatement Program, $100,000 cost share from the Coastal Conservancy. Humboldt Redwood Company has pledged $123,000 in both in-kind and cash contributions. And then Redwood Community Action Agency, which was previously involved in some of the Elk River activities, has conducted the longitudinal profile that I mentioned, and that's their cost share of $10,000. So this pilot project implementation program, I think, is something that is very important to this program, and I'm grateful that the State Water Board asked and made it a part of it. I think it's a way to demonstrate to the residents and the resource agencies and other stakeholders in the watershed that we have the capacity to move forward with implementation, and then that we're not going to continue to study this watershed to death. This is a sentiment that I've heard in virtually every meeting that I've attended in the Elk River: is why another study? Why aren't we doing something? When are we going to start fixing the problem? And I think that I want to make it clear to the folks involved in this program that we think the implementation is starting now, and we can start that implementation in parallel with the recovery assessment itself. And so I'll show you a little bit of the plan that your staff and I are putting together to begin this implementation program. But the second bullet here describes another reason why I think this is important. The implementation projects themselves will be intended to inform the recovery assessment. So in other words, testing some of the remediation methods that we intend to propose and how effective they are, looking at some of the implementation logistics. And the easiest one to think of is, where are we going to put the sediment if we start dredging it out of the Elk River? We've got to figure that out now and not wait till later. Implementation costs. You know, there are certain costs that we are familiar with for restoration projects, but they're different in different watersheds, so I think having some of this information will help us plan for implementation. And then this is a big one, too, the environmental compliance options. How are we going to get through the permitting process with this program? I have some more information to share with you on that. So as I mentioned, the State Water Board, when they granted the funds to the Regional Board, they provided enough funding for at least one pilot project, and we have that money in our contract now. The funding is for the design and engineering of one project, and then Humboldt Redwood Company will provide a cost share to do the implementation, and so we're in the planning phase for that project now. As the second bullet says, we need a permitting and implementation strategy a little more broadly throughout the Elk River, and so we've already started those conversations to try to get that ball rolling. And then, you know, identifying potential funding sources down the road. And we know most of them, I think. The Fishery Restoration Grant Program's available. The Coastal Conservancy's already pledged money for this effort. We have the North Coast Resource Partnership. There's the EPA 319 program that's been designated as able to focus on Elk River. The North Natural Resources Conservation Service is actually in Elk River watershed, and they've got the Farm Bill funding and a salmon initiative. And so we're starting to lay out the groundwork for where the funding will come from for a broader investment in this watershed. The permitting will be a challenge, I think. And what we've tried to do here, working with your staff, Adona and Matt St. John and Alita, is to try to break down the different options that are available to develop permits and go through the environmental compliance process. So options 1 through 4 are from simple to more complex. Simplest being get a categorical exemption, so you don't actually have to comply with CEQA that way. You're exempted from it. Or if you get funding through the Department of Fish and Wildlife Fishery Restoration Grant Program, you get your permits from them through their programmatic. And so that would be about the easiest way to get a permit for a single project. Otherwise, if we didn't have those options, we could do option 2, which would be to conduct a site-specific CEQA analysis, and that's a fairly straightforward process. We're looking at that as a viable option for one of our pilot projects here in the near term. Option 3, the way I look at option 3 is a reach-wide programmatic that would allow us to do several projects within a discrete reach and do a permitting process once for a number of projects. And we've identified either Humboldt County or the Regional Water Board as a viable lead agency for CEQA. And then option 4, I think, is probably something we need to look at for the long term for a broader implementation program. And this would involve a system-wide programmatic EIR. There are a couple templates available for that. One is the Salt River project, which you might be familiar with in Humboldt County. And the other is the Trinity River Mechanical Restoration Program, which I was told the regional board was the lead agency for that. And so we've got a couple models that we can look at for that type of environmental compliance approach down the road. I think it's probably not time for that yet, but hopefully we'll get there soon. So I've put together a very simple timeline for a pilot implementation program, and we've got a couple ideas. Well, we have very solid ideas on what projects 1, 2, 3, and 4 might be. We're actually scheduled to go in the field on Monday to look at some of those sites, and so I didn't put them on this table yet. We don't want to commit to something too soon, but we're definitely on laying out this schedule with some discrete projects, with some defined projects. And as you can see, the green boxes are the implementation phases. And so I've structured this so that we can implement a project at least one over the course of the next 3 years, and maybe as we get better toward the end of this program, we can implement more than one project per year. So, like I said, we have funding for at least one project, but we're already starting the gears rolling for doing more than that. And I think there's plenty to do that will inform our recovery assessment, so it shouldn't be a challenge to come up with really good projects. Landowner outreach will be very important for this program. We've already begun some of that. We'll be focusing on primarily the upper, well, developing working groups for the upper, middle, and lower Elk River. And our goal really is to keep the watershed residents and stakeholders well informed as we move forward on this, and the regional board as well. We can keep you informed. We had a kickoff meeting with Humboldt Redwood Company to negotiate and discuss an access agreement with them, so we have access to their properties. We've got a key to their gate now, and we have the ability to go onto their property and collect data. We had a meeting with the ranchers in the lower Elk River at the Farm Bureau office and had very good attendance. Adona was there and our whole technical team was there, and we described to them basically what I'm describing to you today, and we had very good feedback from them. Obviously, they're skeptical of another study and having government agency representatives come on their properties and collect data, but we tried to give them some assurances that, you know, this is a really positive step forward and that they need to be a part of it. At the end of the meeting, we had very good response. The residents, most of the residents, the ranchers, are expressing willingness to give us access to their properties so we can go on there and collect data. There are a couple holdouts, but we'll keep working with them as we can. And we had planned to meet with the middle residents, but we've postponed that because they've already been so cooperative in giving us access to their properties, and so we feel like we'll hold back until it's a more appropriate time to come and meet with them. And so this is the same view that I showed with the Google Earth map, but you can see the parcels laid onto the Elk River Valley. And this is no small feat to assemble this database of names, addresses, phone numbers, and contact information for people so that we can get our crews out on site. And it's been a month now that we've been trying to do this, and we're getting there, but it really is a big challenge. We've identified at least 44 landowners that we want to have access to their properties. And so getting all these people into either a formal landowner access agreement or else getting verbal authorization from them to go onto their properties to collect information is a big challenge. And we've made it clear to Adona, my project manager, and to the residents as well that we're not going to go onto people's property without either a formal access agreement or verbal authorization. So you could use the idea that it's a navigable waterway and it's public trust and go there. But we're not going to do that. Only if people allow us onto their property will we go collect data there. Yeah, so Lita mentioned the stewardship program, and it's still evolving, I think, and we're all trying to wrap our brains around what that will be. But from what I hear described to me, I think I'm supportive of this approach. I think that it can provide working groups that can address specific topics that are of importance in the Elk River, and I've listed them here. I think the second bullet is the one that I would be most keenly interested in being involved with, remediation planning and permitting, but nonetheless all those things are very important to the watershed, and I think providing an umbrella approach to this can make sense and getting the stakeholders involved as they have been extensively in the past, I think. So in conclusion, this recovery assessment, I think, is going to be a very challenging process. It's got a large scope. I don't know of a model that's been built like this that's bigger than this, 20 miles of river channel. We've got multi-stakeholder involvement, but I think we have a solid scientific and planning team assembled to do this, and we're ready to move forward. And I think the community in Elk River is ready for some next steps, some solutions, and so we'll try to get there. Thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it.
Board member questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, for one thing, thanks. I want to thank you, you and your organization, you personally with your professional credentials. It's got to be, I think you said you're an aquatic ecologist, and it's got to be a big dream of an aquatic ecologist and a a geomorphologist to do a job like this. I mean, this is kind of the big Mac Daddy of that kind of work. And I would imagine your first word here is challenging. I would imagine it is. I want to thank you, for one, for putting yourself and your organization up there. I would be remiss, by the way, not to recognize that Bill Massey went with me to the state board. You mentioned me. And actually, Alita was there. There was Kat Coleman came from resources over to help us. And by the way, thank you, state board, again. I'm really happy that this is in play. A couple questions for you. It looks to me like you're moving both in series and parallel at the same time, that you've got things in play, and you're starting to stair-step your way through some of that process. I'm just kind of wondering a couple things. For one, TMDL implementation, and this is a question for you too, Alita. We have contemplated a single action where we have waste discharge requirements on the industrial timberland owners for their part of this. I assume, though, that as this goes, that with as this model is formulated and the hydrodynamic model and the recovery model framework is formulated, then there's got to be room built into this adoption of TMDL to implement whatever comes out of this process. And it's kind of the first time I've contemplated it in any real way, but there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out of this, and there's a lot to learn, and it's pre-decisional at this point to even think about what this is all going to do.
So you're exactly right. There are a number of pieces at play simultaneously, and it does make it complex. What the TMDL does is a broad assessment of sediment and its impact on the system. It looks at the variety of sources, so sources both that Darren and his program are going to be addressing, as well as sediment sources up on the hill slope that a permit would be addressing. The key in the watershed stewardship framework, one of the keys is this idea of establishing a working group to do coordinated monitoring and inform adaptive management. And it's exactly to address this phenomena, that there is an interim period prior to the moment when we have not only the implementation framework that Darren's group will be producing as a result of the hydrodynamic modeling, but then true remediation design plans and a contractor in place, or people in place and funding in place to implement those designs. There's that interim period in which activities need to continue to happen to reduce sediment delivery. And then there's what happens after remediation, and as the channel is reconfigured, the nuisance flooding condition, the impacts to drinking water supplies, et cetera, are reduced. Then the stream channel capacity is enlarged. And what effect does that have on our implementation of a waste discharge requirement? So the stewardship framework is really a really good tool for having those conversations, establishing a work group, in particular establishing a coordinated monitoring system so that we can really keep track of how the system is responding to the variety of activities that we'll be involved in.
Great. The other thing you mentioned, the CEQA process here, we've given Samantha Olson high praise, and I believe she deserves it for being creative with CEQA. You mentioned the Trinity program and some of that type of thing. The programmatic approach has really been effective out there for that kind of thing. Our staff, certainly, you have us as a project, or regional board as a project manager through Adona, and I'd encourage you to reach out to our staff as, consult Samantha. She's really great at that. I'm sure you've already done that, but she deserves high praise in being creative on the CEQA side. Your permitting is going to be tough here, but it's a permitter's dream. It's a good thing.
Well, yeah.
Right? Or nightmare.
If you're a planner.
Yeah, that's right. Well, even ecologists have to plan, man. Thank you very much, Darren.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think this is a question for Darren, and maybe for Alita as well, but you gave us a lot of very good overview of the process. Are you willing to share with us how or what metrics you might look at that would help you assess success in a dynamic system? In other words, you're going to go and do a pilot program in a portion of a river that's still moving. And so you're going to go in and do something, an event is going to occur, and things are going to move. Even just thinking out loud, what metrics might you identify to see, well, did that really make a difference? And if we did it bigger over a larger area, will it get us where we want to be? But the the fact that you're going to be doing a partial project in a dynamic system strikes me as it might be challenging to assess your effectiveness.
Well, think of one of the examples that we're considering as a pilot project. We would go into a river segment, let's say a 500-foot section of Elk River, and we would remove some of the vegetation and sediment off the floodplain to enlarge the channel capacity, allow flooding to be reduced a little bit, although on a pilot scale, probably not much. But then we want to see to what extent that floodplain would re-aggrade. In other words, do we lose what we just invested in, or can we count on some of the investment, some of the remediation to be sustainable? And I think in the early stages, we'll likely expect that it's going to re-aggrade. The sediment's going to come right back in. But a success metric would be to be able to lay out a program in which we can remove the sediment and not have it come back. And so that's I think, the target of remediation, to recreate the equilibrium in the system that everyone tells me used to exist in the past, but that's just slightly out of kilter now.
And maybe I'd just add, and you can correct me, Darren, if I've got this wrong, but my understanding also is that the modeling itself will be conducted in such a way as to model the system as it currently operates, and then under a number of scenarios, future scenarios, including or considering various remediation actions. So if you remove an amount of sediment from a particular reach, what does the model now suggest will be the end result? And that will be part of the way by which they come up with an implementation framework to propose to us at the end.
Do you think this modeling might give you some predictive abilities if we were going to apply, you come up with a system that you think works, that you might be able to predict just how much sediment would be required to be removed to achieve nirvana?
Yeah, I think that's very much a part of what we want to look at, either remove it or somehow prevent it from getting into the channel. So another type of project that I think we want to look at is some kind of sediment trap on a tributary, for example. So there's a lot of legacy sediment left in the channel, and it's heading down toward the main stem, and we want to capture it and take it out of the stream before it gets there so that we don't have to come back and remove it again when it gets routed downstream. And so that's exactly what we want to do there.
I would hope you would feel free to come back and give us updates. I think it's a fascinating project, and I certainly wish you the best of luck, but I personally would not get tired of hearing updates.
It's good to know. Thank you.
Board Member Massey.
Mr. Chair, I would echo Mr. Giusti. I'm looking at your timelines, and it looks like you will have some accomplishments by this time in 2015, 16, and 17. And I would ask that you come back and tell us what this is telling you.
More than happy to do that, yes.
Mr. Corbett and I have been here a long time. We haven't done anything yet. It'd be kind of fun to do.
Just my comments. I agree with Board Member Giusti on the concern that the earlier projects, I would not be surprised, will re-aggrade and will not show success. But you got to start somewhere in a system, and the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth project is when you're going to start to see the results, because you've removed enough that it's actually noticeable in the system. And so I think going to the model is a good approach, because I think if you cleaned out a little sediment in one portion, it'll be graded the next winter. But that doesn't mean it didn't do good in the system, and so on and so forth. So I don't want you to get discouraged, and I don't want us too much into instant success. Having said that, it is vitally important that you get some projects on the ground, and you recognize that. I'm just trying to praise you for, usually these things are studied, and then da-da-da-da-da, and then in this watershed, I think the regional board has a credibility problem, and so does all the California agencies. We shouldn't beat ourselves up, and everybody has a credibility problem in this watershed. We got to put some bread and butter on the table for those residents, that they can see something is actually happening on the ground. So I want to reaffirm that it's worth going ahead and doing that. I want to indicate going to the model, I think, is the way, because I agree with the comment of my fellow board member that measuring success of an individual project over a short period of time is going to be very challenging.
Could I just make the point that I'm very grateful that all of you have the wisdom to recognize the caution associated with our expectations of the pilot projects as actual sediment remediation, that there may be some benefit, and that we can do that early is certainly a benefit overall in the watershed. But the primary purpose of those pilot projects is to test the techniques and to use the model as a way of determining whether those techniques show promise in the large scale when we get to the full-scale implementation. So I applaud you for understanding that, recognizing that we need to have some caution in terms of our expectations.
And the one other comment I have is I think it's critically important, and Caltrout, I think, just because of the personnel and who's director, probably have a good relationship with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, but I have it red flagged that as you move down the staff there, sometimes it is challenging on restoration projects. If you run into any problems like that, I think as a regional board member, I'd like to know, because we'd like to take it up the ladder and figure out a way to make restoration work within the department. And they have had some recent successes. They're doing better all the time. I think Director Bonham's done a tremendous job of that. But there's still some rough edges and eddies, and it's the most siloed agency I've ever seen in my life. So if you run into that, we'd like to know right away, so that we can provide as much support to you as possible.
I will do so, and I thank you for that backup. And just to note that, we work with them professionally on and off all the time, and very familiar with those folks and the programs that they support. And I don't anticipate having barriers there.
And then I may want to take you out to lunch in Arcadia, and you can tell me how to work with them.
Okay. I'd be happy to do that.
Well, thank you.
Who buys?
Yeah.
All right.
I also just wanted to mention in closing that I parked next to somebody in the parking lot that had a Trout Unlimited sticker on their window, and I think it was a Juicy on the license plate. So we'll get some Caltrout literature over to you pretty soon, Mr. Juicy.
Okay, we have two public comments, one from Felice Pace, and the second is Christy Rigby. So.
Thanks, John.
Okay. And Felice, I knew she was going to say that. So.
It's fine with me. I just wanted to give her the shot if she wanted it. Felice Pace, and I'm here right now for the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. And this nuisance situation, it's important to remember that it resulted from reviewed and approved THPs that were reviewed by this agency and approved by the CDF. And that has damaged lives and livelihoods. So it is appropriate that there is a cleanup, and we fully support that. However, allowing logging to continue while a nuisance still exists is counterintuitive, and it dishonors this community. But on the other hand, we have had situations before where we've had sediment listings up on the Klamath National Forest in mixed ownerships, where before we had TMDLs, where we could still have logging, we could still have THPs, and we could still have Forest Service timber sales, because the requirement was, and your staff fully supported this and implemented it, that the sediment produced by the actual THP had to be fully mitigated, either on within the THP area and within the project or adjacent to it, but as part of that project. So I think more sediment should not be added to this. And so any THPs, I believe your staff ought to insist that a THP model how much sediment it's going to produce, and either contribute into the fund, for this project, or mitigate the sediment right on the site. I have a question for you. Why why should the taxpayers pay to mitigate the landowner's responsibilities? Why is that? Why are we in that situation? I'll leave it there just as a question. And I'll also note that there's an industrial landowner in their GDR that has not contributed to the fund at all. But more importantly, you know, in my mind, as I see it, having been in restoration going way back like 35 years and being one of the promoters of the restoration economy for a long time, restoration is being transformed into mitigation. Really, what's happening here is not going to be restoration, it's mitigating past damage. Mitigation, restoration funds, and you're using cleanup and abatement funds. But in a bigger sense, when we take our restoration funds, which were discussed there, the various funding sources, and we apply it to mitigate damage, then we're not doing restoration, we're doing mitigation. And this is something I just wanted to bring up for you guys to ask you to think about a little bit about that situation. And stewardship. Is stewardship a mechanism for corporation and landowners to externalize their costs onto the public? Is that what stewardship is? Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Christy Wrigley.
All right, I'm Christy Wrigley. I'm from Elk River. I represent myself and my neighbors, Elk River Residents Association. And I'm not quite as honored as Darren is to work in this project, but I am honored to work with Darren. I would like to remind you that the residents would like the root cause of the problem addressed. Don't be just looking to relieve Dead Woman's Corner as an engineering thing. The root cause is logging, and we all know that, and that needs to be addressed. 500 acres a year on the North Fork, 250 clear-cut equivalent acres. You cannot at one time look how you're going to make it better and then make it worse all the time. And we see it. We live there. We pay attention. And we aren't just your ordinary residents either. We run a lab, we cross-section the river, we gauge it, we're there day and night. And we go out on the land and we look at it, and we see the sediment brought down, even in this past year. So I would like you to include the residents, especially me, on all THPs before you approve them. There are a lot of best management practices, but they are not effective in Elk River. That logging plan that you're looking at now has about 500 acres. There's about three areas. It is directly across where everybody lives. I know three people are moving because they're scared to death. And this is very scary to us, especially when we hear the plan proponents say, oh, we don't think that you're going to get any sediment from our logging plan. It's never happened in the past. We've never seen it. That is highly erosive soil. It's the third part, the Area 3, is right up above Elk River Court. Those people are being flooded, as am I, and I won't be able to sum up in time. So let me also say that some other facts that were associated with, they also cut down to 75 to 100 basal area, which is very close to the minimum allowed, and we're the most damaged watershed out there. We've had continuous cutting in our watershed since 2002. Our Elk River represents maybe 10% of HRC's ownership and 40% of their cut. We cannot use the water in Elk River as our domestic water for the first time in our lives. And I've watched that river. I saw it in 77. It didn't look like it does today. And we had 5 inches less rain that year. Literally, I have 300 feet of the river is pure grass. And the rest of it looks like spider webs and algae on the bottom. So though HRC looks like they're contributing a lot at $120,000, and I appreciate their participation, and I'd like to directly participate with them, not only on the THP process, but on these plans. So I thank you. Please involve us. We are not your ordinary residents who are unaware. We're very aware, and we know a lot. We welcome sharing that with Darren, and we will update you anytime you need. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Just one thing to add. I give up $40,000 a year every year because I have no crop, and that's a lot of money. But it isn't just the money. It's the history that means much, much more than the money. Thank you.
Okay, any staff comments? Okay. That concludes that agenda item. So we are on to agenda.